Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you very much, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? It's a day of two halves. Mad rain this morning and now it's blue skies and sunshine. Well, that's the way it was in Dublin anyway. How are you? 51551 or Ray at RTE.ie. We say, before we do anything else, happy birthday to Billy Connolly. He's 80 today. The great Billy Connolly. We sort of took him in, didn't we? Well, Gay Byrne took him in and we watched and we laughed. And he was brilliant. Just to celebrate his birthday, we said we'd play a bit of Billy Connolly for you. Now, it's hard to find Billy Connolly that's less than 6 minutes because he's such a brilliant storyteller. So it starts and he meanders and he goes off here, there and everywhere. And eventually at some stage, after 7 or 8 minutes, he comes back for the punchline. But Neil searched and searched on your behalf and he found this. And it has an Irish connection because Billy Connolly is telling a story of being in an Irish restaurant and he's looking through the menu and he sees potatoes of the night. Woo! Sounds posh.
And I was really looking forward to this. I said, oh, potatoes of the night for me. You know, I thought they'd bring them out one at a time, you know. Just very shy creatures. Keep the lights down. No sudden noises. No sudden movement. I was so disappointed, and I'm sure you will be when I tell you. Potatoes of the night was potatoes how they were doing them that night. Mashed, boiled. Isn't it a pisser? Isn't that the worst news you ever heard? Potatoes of the night. I mean, you would expect Leonard Cohen to be singing about them. She gave me potatoes of the night. I couldn't have been, because already in my mind I had it down. I mean, this was a nocturnal potato native to Ireland. Specialist farmers at 4 o'clock in the morning out in the fields. You know, miner's helmet with a light on it. There's one. That was a big cracker, just ran down its hole before I got a chance to grab it. The chips are scattering off your plate and running into dark corners.
The big yin. Happy birthday, Billy Connolly, 80 today. Still on funny stuff, Phoebe Bridgers is going out with Kildare man Paul Mescal, and she was interviewed about what she's doing for Christmas and what she did last Christmas by Vogue magazine. And she said that she travelled to Paul Mescal's house in Maynooth in Kildare last year. She said, and this is a direct quote, "Last year I stayed with my boyfriend's family in Ireland. It was a full rom-com." So she was entertained. She laughed. And it got me thinking, not that I'm, you know, it's all about my stories, but I was about 15, 16, met this girl from Naas in a nightclub. I'm from Kildare town. Now, Naas, in my head, doesn't make any sense, was a posher place. And for a girl from Naas to take any interest in me from Kildare town, I was, whoa, that's big time. So I wanted to impress. So I said to this girl, after just meeting her for one night or maybe two, "Would you like to come over for Sunday tea?" I said to her, to my house. And she said, yes, I will travel over from Naas on the bus to Kildare town, a distance of 10 miles, to have Sunday tea with your family. You see, I hadn't told her that there was 9 in the family and that the menu for the Darcy Sunday tea was crisp sandwiches, cupcakes, apple tart, and maybe a scallion sandwich thrown in. And with the 9 of us sitting around and everything that goes with that. And the poor girl arrived in and I don't know, I never saw her again anyway. She got the bus back to Naas and that was the end of that relationship. So be careful who you invite into your house for Sunday tea. So that's good. They obviously have a very good relationship, Phoebe Bridgers and Paul Mescal, if she can say something like that. And there's rumours that they're engaged, but nothing has been confirmed. We spoke to Doug Lennon in the past and he's tweeting today. He has a new son, Matthew. Was born yesterday. Congratulations, Doug, and welcome to the world, Matthew. The new baby Matthew shares his birthday with dad, Doug, and it's the same birthday as his older brother who was born 2 years ago. So three people in the one house sharing a birthday. Now, I know that's not a world record, but it's getting there. It's getting there. And that's going to be a big day, isn't it, from here on in? Three birthdays and somebody's going to be overlooked and who chooses the cake and all that sort of thing. There's going to be all sorts of birthday politics going on there. Gilbert O'Sullivan is looking for a ghetto blaster. Yeah, I know. caught my attention when I heard it. So he has a Geta Blaster, but it stopped working. And seemingly he does all his demos on an old 1970s Geta Blaster. And it's a little bit different than your average Geta Blaster in that it has inbuilt microphones. You see, he couldn't record himself if it didn't have inbuilt microphones. So he's put a call out on his social media web page thingamajig looking for a Geta Blaster with inbuilt microphones so he can continue to make his demos the same way as he's done for years and years and years. I wonder, did he record a demo for this on his Geta Blaster with inbuilt microphones? I'd like to think he did. Yeah, Gilbert.
Wait a little while from now, if I'm not feeling any less sound, I promise myself to treat myself and visit a nearby tower. And climbing to the top, will throw myself off in an effort to make clear to whoever what it's like when you're shattered, left standing in the lurch at a church where
we wait for the chorus.
Right. Yeah. She stood him up. No point in us remaining. We may as well go on as I did on my own, alone again, naturally.
Ah. Brilliant songwriter, brilliant singer, Gilbert O'Sullivan. And he's put out a call for a Geta Blaster with inbuilt microphones. So don't bother volunteering your common or garden Geta Blasters with no inbuilt microphones. There'll be a lot of stuff like that bought tomorrow. Black Friday. Well, it started at the beginning of November, but tomorrow is the day, Black Friday. And it seems like everyone's gone completely haywire with the Black Friday thingamajig. But one independent bookstore in Drogheda has said no to Black Friday because they just can't afford to. And Connor was mentioning this on Monday, that a lot of independent small businesses can't rise to the challenge of Black Friday with the big discounts and all of that. Anyway, Academy Books in Drogheda wrote on Twitter, "We are not doing Black Friday because we can't afford to. Independent bookshops are trying to pay rent, light, staff, heat and rates. Discounting to the point of not being viable is not an option. We're offering wrapping and discount barista coffees and lots of book advice instead." And apparently they've got a great reaction to this. People have left in lists of books they want to buy and would like to have gift wrapped. Isn't that lovely? Owner Irene Gahan said, "We've gotten a big reaction and from so many other shops as well, saying fair play to you." And from authors too. They got retweets from other bookstores, writers, libraries, university publishers and literary agents. Maybe this is the beginning of the backlash against Black Friday. The Black Friday backlash started in Drogheda, don't you know, in November of 2022. There was a woman called Irene Gahan and she just said no to Black Friday. It's the World Cup. Do you mention it? Do you not mention it? But and the stories that I love about the World Cup are the ones that you feel obliged to mention, and that's the 2-1 win by Japan over Germany, which is again upset. And then the Japanese fans stayed after to clean up the stadium. Like, that's just amazing. And that was lovely when I think his name was Manso, was it? The Japanese player who scored the second goal. And after he scored it, there was sort of he did a parade. Now, there was none of that showboating, like doing a cartwheel or going down on your knees. He sort of just walked through all of the coaching team, his own team, and just they all congratulated him. It was very respectful and sedate compared to some of the celebrations. Anyway, that's what happened yesterday, and Brazil are playing today, but you know that if you're following it, and maybe we'll stop talking about it or maybe not. Anyway, 51551 RadRT.ie brings back memories, says Dan in Cork, of seeing Billy at Connolly Hall, Cork, and literally falling off my seat from laughing. Was in the back row and sat up on the back of my chair and ended up falling back and sliding down the wall. Bursting my sides laughing. Billy, still one of the very best ever. Yeah. Very, very funny. Very, very funny. And he has that thing where you know that he's some of it, not all of it, he's making it up as he goes along and he's laughing at what he's just discovered in his head, you know, because he's hearing it for the first time himself. I adore Billy Connolly. I'm in absolute bliss listening to that clip. A perfectionist. Laughter is truly the best medicine. Yes, indeed it is. 51551RadRT.ie. Good afternoon. Harry Styles. Treat people with kindness. And Grace was just saying, imagine him doing that with the Muppets. And that's a brilliant notion. And I could see it. It would be brilliant. Bring back the Muppets just for that. 51551RadRT.ie. Better tell you about our quiz today. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. Now, the price, great price. It's a two-night stay for two at Dublin's Hard Rock Hotel with a bottle of bubbly awaiting you on your arrival. So, the Dublin's Hard Rock Hotel, right smack in the middle of the city. You can go to the January sales. You can spend those fabulous Christmas vouchers. They have the Material Girl package. You can find out more about that at hardrockhotel.com. And then when you get there, there's all the memorabilia from David Bowie, Beyonce, the Rolling Stones, and lots more. You get to eat in their incredible Peruvian-inspired Zampa's bar and restaurant. And then, when you're returning to your room, you can go up there with some vinyl and a record player, or maybe even bring a Fender guitar and an amp to rock it out in style. Hardrockhotel.com. Here's your qualifying question today, Thursday afternoon. Today is a big national holiday celebrated in America. Is it Thanksgiving or Groundhog Day? So today, big holiday in America. Is it Thanksgiving or Groundhog Day? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, this afternoon, Family Carers Ireland held an awards ceremony in Dublin to honour the work of the half a million or so people in the country who, unpaid, that's hugely important, unpaid, look after loved ones in the home. Among them are about 67,000 children between the ages of 10 and 17. And among that 67,000 is Cara Darmody. Now, you might remember, we first met Cara on the show back in May. You were 11 then, Cara, weren't you?
Yeah, I turned 12 in September.
Yeah,
so
exactly. See,
3 months ago.
Yes, so you're 12 now. Yeah. In fifth class in Ard Finnan in Tipperary. And the reason we spoke to Cara back then was she was taking on the extraordinary challenge to raise funds for children with autism in her area by doing the junior cycle maths exam at the age of 11. Cara's younger brothers, Neil and John, are autistic, and Cara has been an amazing advocate for them at such a young age. Since then, she, you might have seen her on the Late Late Show getting her results. She got 97%. That's a distinction. It's also an A in my world, but a distinction. Well done on that. And you've met the Taoiseach. I think we spoke to you after you met the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. You've met Leo Varadkar as well. And now, just a matter of minutes ago, you were named as the Munster Young Carer of the Year. Congratulations!
Thank you!
Hey, great to see you again. And you're here with your mum, Noelle.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm here, my mum.
Lovely to be here.
I've never met you before.
Well, you're meeting her today.
I
am. This is the first time you've seen her in person.
It is in person.
Now you can't ever say that you didn't meet her ever again.
I can't. That is a fact. Cara,
it is
Darmody.
A fact.
It is. Now, tell me about the awards. Did you know that you were going to win?
No.
No.
I didn't.
You didn't. You had to look to your mum there. Now, was it a little secret or you didn't know?
No.
Didn't know. Well, congratulations. And you were nominated, of course, and there were loads of people there and it's brilliant. And I suppose the important thing is that carers all over the country were honoured today. Isn't that? And you're one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That there's 67,000 young carers, and I'm so grateful that I got the Munster Young Carer, and I'm so grateful to everybody who supports me. And it was really funny, and I got to speak on the stage, and I got to talk to Miriam, and she was really nice. It was my dream to meet her.
Yeah.
But now I'm here today with one of my favourite people of all time, Ray Darcy.
You're a chancellor and a charmer.
And Ray. And Ray.
Yes.
And remember.
Yes.
Remember those mugs you gave us back in, I think, June or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad and I drink from them almost every single day. They're starting to go worn out now.
Well,
because we use them so much, the texture's almost gone.
I tell you what, listen, since then, we've replaced those mugs with keep cups. And you can have one of those keep cups. Is that fair enough?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, remind people about John and Neil. John is what age?
John is 5 and Neil is 10. He turned 10 in the last week of October.
Yeah. I watched your child's talk. And for people who don't know about that, that's where a number of children from all over the country, including you, were invited up to speak to the Children's Ombudsman.
Yeah, in Leinster House.
Yes, yeah. And you delivered a very strong speech.
Yeah.
You talked about John and Neil.
And I told them what I would do if I was Taoiseach for a day, and that I gave basically gave 3 points for financial relief, accountability, and for carers to be treated better.
Yes, you said end parents paying privately, make HSE and government accountable, and treat carers properly.
Mm-hmm, that'll be correct.
They're pretty straightforward things, which are very achievable, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I explained them a bit better in the trial talk, so anyone wants to listen back to it.
Yeah.
So.
And you also explained about John and Neil. And Neil came first. He was diagnosed about 3 3/4.
Yes.
Yes. So he'd no early intervention.
Yeah, and his window of opportunity closed.
Right.
He didn't get the early intervention and he never got the proper services that he deserved in the HSE.
However, John...
He did.
Your parents paid for early intervention.
Yeah,
yes.
But even that, it's so wrong that my parents have to pay for early intervention because John makes so much more progress than Neil, even though John is 5 years younger than Neil.
Yeah. So it's you can see there in your house the difference that early intervention makes.
Yeah, even though there's a 5-year gap between them, John's making so much more progress because he got early intervention and private services. And my parents shouldn't even be paying for these private services. The HSE should have paid for both of them, but they're not. They're not paying for it. And the government should be doing it too. And it's so sad to see the clear difference between my brothers that, like, Neil is left the way he is now, that he hits and bites himself every single day. And people always tell me that I'll probably have a nice weekend. But I won't. And I don't have nice weekends because every weekend when I come home or every time I see Neil, he's often hitting and biting himself. And John won't be doing that. And John will be trying to spell words and understand what Mammy and Daddy are saying. And it's so sad.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
It is.
But I'm trying to raise awareness.
No, I know you are. And I think sometimes people forget that that's the reality for you. And your parents and John and Neil.
Yeah.
Because they see you smiling and doing the junior cert and getting 97% and getting awards and doing talks. And they forget that you've to go home to the reality. And the reason you're doing all this is because of what's at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm doing it also to raise awareness. And also another one of the reasons would be that I also found out on top of all of this information that I already have, another piece of information that I found out that there are 18,000 children left to rot on a HSE waiting list. Like my two brothers, Neil and John, and when Neil didn't get earlier intervention, that there are 18,000 children just like him who are going to rot on a waiting list. It is so wrong that there are 18,000 children like this and that they're not doing anything about it. They must treat it like the house is on fire. It's an emergency.
Yeah. But here's the thing, and it's important that we talk about this because you met me, Hall Martin, during the summer. You said he was the nicest man you've ever met. He listened to you for how long?
Pardon?
How long were you with him?
I was with him for 80 minutes.
80?
80.
That's an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's a long time to get with the leader of the country.
Yeah, it really is a long time.
Yes.
And he told me that he would promise change. But I told him that if there's no change done, that I'll be back. And so, it's the middle of November now.
Yes.
So, what change has been done? Has he changed anything? No, nothing's been changed. So I told him that if there's no change done, that I'll be back. But I'm back now. And now I am going to make sure that this year that there is change done. Because the problem's getting too serious now and they're not realising that. And the government and the HSE, they need to do something about it and they need to change their attitudes and they need to treat this like a national crisis.
Mm. Do you think, and this is a big question, Cara, do you think he took you seriously?
Well, he acted like he took me seriously, but however, behind it all, in the end, he never made any changes.
Yeah.
So we have to look on the facts. He did sound like he listened, and yes, he probably did listen, but he didn't make any change. Yeah. There's a big difference between listening and actually deciding to do something about it. There's three big differences between listening, deciding to do something, and actually doing it.
Yeah.
They are three different things.
And of course, he's been replaced in the new year.
Yeah, in December 17th.
But you've met the next Taoiseach as well, Leo Varadkar.
Yeah, I met him in May and we're going to have to meet him again very soon because since he's going to be the new Taoiseach, we need to get do something about this because it's going to be for the next 2 years. So,
two and a half years. Have the lads any awareness of what you're doing for them? Your brothers, do they know about you? They must have seen you on the Late Late Show, did they? Did they recognise you on the television? Or?
Well, it's very hard, but I suppose, ma'am, you can confirm to this, can't you, that one of your friends sent you a message of Neil recognising me on television, and he got like really excited.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Our boys have little to no comprehension,
right.
As you've touched on. Yeah. John would have been lucky enough to avail of private services, and there would be more comprehension there. He'd understand what we were saying. So yes, when he sees Cara on TV, he recognises it's Cara, it's mum, it's dad, or it's just dad and it's Cara.
Yeah.
Neil wouldn't. None. But the night that we were brought up for the Late Late Show, if you like, one of my friends stayed with Neil, so one of us would sleep with Neil. Neil is 24/7 care, so that is all night long, Ray.
Yeah.
She stayed, and Neil actually sat and was watching the Late Late, which is unheard of. And mum and dad were on the screen, and Cara, and we have a lovely little clip of him watching. It's unheard of in our house that we would get that, and that was actually sent to me while I was above.
So he did. There was a little. That,
he
that,
did.
That was
so
the first,
I think for Cara, you know, as she said, there's so much that needs to change for children. Mm. They're still children. To answer your question, look, we were mentioned yesterday in Leader's Questions, our family, and if we just take the Taoiseach at his word, yesterday he was quoted as saying, "It's not a funding issue that we don't have therapists; it's a recruitment issue."
Mm.
So really, I think systematically, the HSE have shown that they're not able to recruit and retain staff at this stage. We really need to take that off the HSE, give it to an outside body to recruit, and just remove the problem. Bring in someone who's motivated to do that, because at the end of the day, we don't have enough therapists on the ground, and the children are entitled to services.
And do you get respite?
No, my children are not in respite.
But do you get any break at all?
I'm here today.
Yes, okay,
so normally how
enough,
it works
yes,
for yeah. our I'm here today because Mark is at home with the boys.
Yes, okay.
We would have fantastic, I suppose, friends who did try and allow for me to go with them to the Late Late, but our boys are such care that they need mum or they need dad.
Yeah.
But it is usually mum that's there, and as I would say, it is 24/7. It is all day long. Cara is sanctioned by Tusla to study at home one day a week. That's because of our circumstances.
Yes.
The boys are full on when they're in the house.
And it's important for people to know that doing the junior cert maths was your idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
It was your idea. Where did it come from? Why did you? Because some people do skip-a-thons, some people walk, some people make cupcakes. You decided at the age of 11 to do junior cert maths.
Well, it was in September 2021 when my daddy was sitting in the kitchen. And so I told him that I came up with a brilliant idea, and he was expecting me to say I would cut the lawn for him or something. But no, I told him that I was going to take the junior cert maths exam for charity. And he was so shocked that he nearly fell off the stool and I had to do CPR on him. But the funniest part of that story is that when he started to recover from a shock, I then told him that he would be teaching me for this impossible task. Then he really died, and then I had to really do CPR on him. But despite
he didn't really, though. But yeah, I know. But it's
but despite the junior cert, though, I have to just say something though about the Late Late Show 2 Fridays ago. Well, like yeah. 2 weeks ago, that our fundraiser, that the site went down on the night, and so people weren't able to donate. So just anybody here who's listening today, who's thinking about donating to my fundraiser, or even just thinking about like doing it, or if they are trying to do it the last time when I was on the Late Late Show but they couldn't, then today is your chance, because you can look up Cara's Mount Everest Maths Challenge.
Right.
Hear me, Cara's Mount Everest Maths Challenge, and you can either donate to GoFundMe, the Cara's Mount Everest Maths Challenge on GoFundMe, or the Cara's Mount Everest Maths Challenge on iDonate.
Right.
Either or, but every single penny that will go towards helping people. And the site on iDonate went down last Friday night.
I'd say it was because so many people wanted to help you. They were so impressed by you. And the big news is that you're going to do...
It was a 404 page, so the page went down.
You're going to do Leaving Cert Maths.
Yeah, I am going to do the Leaving Cert Maths.
Next
because,
year?
In June.
At the age of 12?
Yeah.
My word.
You okay?
Yeah.
You're more shocked than my dad. I think I have to do CPR on you, right?
We actually say in our house, because Mark has to teach himself before he teaches Cara,
oh, yeah.
It's a case of the blind leading the intelligent. I think she's teaching him this time around. There's such a jump up in the text.
That's big. That's big news. Have you know, you're only 12, so you haven't decided what you want to do when you grow up. A ridiculous adult question to a 12-year-old.
I kind of have. Like, I could decide to, like, be the Taoiseach. I could be a minister.
Yeah.
Or maybe I could just take your job.
Yeah, well, there you go. You'll be well capable of doing it. Thank you, Cara. What a beautiful, strong girl. I hope the people in high places are listening. Just because you're here, we have there are some lovely books that we've. So there, that was an award last night as well. That's Girls Who Slay Monsters, and you're a bit like that. Girls Who Slay
this
Monsters,
is
aren't
cool.
they? Because that's you. You and there's Dara McAnulty. And Dara has Dara's autistic, and that's a lovely book on birds. And this one, Yuval Noah Harari, Unstoppable Us: How Humans Took Over the World.
So there
for you. And listen, congratulations.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations.
Thank you so
again.
Much.
Noel, thanks for
Thank
coming
you.
In.
Thanks for having
great
us.
Great to see you. There's a little bit of a surprise as well when you go out there, but I can't say anything about it. But great to see you again, and
Thank
keep
you.
It going. And anytime you want something said,
sorry to
say
interrupt,
it to us.
But just
yes.
one thing for all the people who are thinking of donating, that every penny that will go towards helping people, and I will send people, and every person who donates, I will send them a thank you message. And every single person who donated inspires me to keep going.
Right, you're
brilliant. Donation is a help, a big help. It will help somebody somewhere.
Yes. Cara Darmody, thank you very much. Noelle, thanks for
thank
coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We might have a ghetto blaster for Gilbert O'Sullivan. There's a sentence I never thought I'd say. Peter Intala got in touch to say he has a 1982 ghetto blaster with condenser microphones. Gilbert can have it if he wants. He says it was an advanced item for its day. The tape machine might need a small repair, but could be what he's looking for. So we put them in touch, which is nice. Now, Charlie McAsey is back. His best-selling book, The Boy, The Mole, The Fox and The Horse, which is loved all over the world and has sold 8 million copies worldwide, is now been made into a little short animated film. It's coming to BBC One and iPlayer this Christmas. And to mark this, a beautifully made hardback book celebrates the work of over 100 animators across 2 years of production, with Charlie's distinctive illustrations brought to life in full colour with hand-drawn traditional animation, which is so beautiful, an accompanying handwritten script done by Charlie himself. We can hear settling himself in the background there. Hello, Charlie.
I am.
Are you okay?
Yeah. How are you?
Good. Great to talk to you again. And congratulations on the book. I can't wait to see the finished product of the film. But the book is absolutely beautiful, as you would expect. And you're all over the 30 minutes of animation. You know what I mean? You're down as co-director, you produce it.
Yeah.
Cuz it's very important to you that this thing that grew out of love, that it's not mismanaged in any way, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't meant to be the co-director or anything. I just couldn't help getting involved. So I was like, as you say, I didn't really want it to, you know, be too far from the book.
Yeah.
And the only way of doing that was actually stick around and say no, you can't say that.
Was there a lot of that? No, you can't do that.
It was more let's do this rather than don't do that.
I think it was more, you know.
I mean, I was in danger of sounding like a grumpy schoolmaster.
But it's your thing. You've lovingly brought these characters to life, haven't you? But you're out of your head, so you want it to be good.
Yeah, they're from my crazy head. Yeah.
So Idris Elba, Tom Hollander, and our own Gabriel Byrne. Gabriel Byrne's the horse.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah.
He is. You know, he's amazing. Like I always want him to be in it. I think we were struggling to get hold of him, and I hand wrote him a letter and got his address and sent it, and thought I didn't think he'd reply.
Mm.
And then my phone rang, and is that Charlie? I said, yes, it's Gabriel.
Gabriel.
Hi, Gabriel. How are you doing? He said, all right. And I said, so what do you think? Did you get the letter? He said, I did. And I said, so what do you, you know, what would you like? Do you fancy being the horse? He said, Charlie, I am the horse.
That'd be deadly, Charlie. That'd be deadly.
It was unbelievable. Oh, it was the best line I've ever heard. So yeah, that was it, really. Yeah.
So you've seen the finished product on a big screen.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
What was? I know you've been seeing bits of it in rushes and this and that and the other, but when you actually saw it, you know, as we will see it, what was that like?
Well, you know, I've seen it every day for 2 years in the making. And so in one sense, I couldn't see, I was so in it that I couldn't really see it. But I think when you invite a few friends to come along and watch something and see it through their eyes and watch them, it's a whole other thing, you know. Mm. And so I connected with it emotionally, probably, you know, when I was actually watching it on the big screen.
Yeah,
it was quite surreal, really, to see.
but from you doing these little sketches and the words it's a beautiful story in itself, isn't it? How it's happened.
Yeah, you know, I still sort of wake up sometimes in the morning and go, oh, we're making a film. Even 2 years on, I'm still surprised by it.
Mm.
And you know, it is an odd thing. You know, I never dreamt I'd find myself doing this, really, to be honest.
So is it 24 frames a second?
Yeah.
Wow, wow. So 24 drawings a second?
Second, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
My word.
And the thing, you know, in developing, translating really the characters from the book, which are kind of quite scribbly and scratchy, and to a sort of fluid language that 150 animators could all use together. Mm. That took 6 months of, it was quite painful, me drawing and redrawing and them sending me things, and I would draw over the top of them and like some notes. School teacher, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, and I felt for them because it was a hard journey, but...
You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. But all said with love. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we've all become friends, I think. But it was, you know, I think they had a tough road, and I tried to be as kind as I could. But you know, when you want to get something right, you just have to keep at it until it sort of appears, you know.
And Charlie, this is, I suppose, will be judged by. In comparison to the snowman, because that is that, isn't it? No, but it is that iconic thing of animation and Christmas. It, you know, that's people are going to compare, aren't they? Are they?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, it is coming out at Christmas, but it's not. And there is snow in it.
Yes.
But that's as far as it's not necessarily a Christmas film. Maybe it is. You know, maybe it is the right time for it.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it is. Yeah.
It's snowy and it's about love, so, you know, maybe it's right.
And it's how the characters meet, and there's some lovely lines in it. Nothing beats kindness. It sits quietly beyond all things. There you go. That's
the mole says that.
Yes.
Yeah,
he has moments of philosophical depth, doesn't he?
Because, he's funny, the mole.
Yeah.
He kind of, one minute he's being completely ridiculous, and the next minute he suddenly comes out with some wise line. I quite like that about him. That you never quite know what you're going to get.
Because he also says,
I think he thinks he's wiser than he is. You know, but he's lovely. He's obsessed with cake. That's his thing. You know,
If at first you don't succeed, have some cake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But then there's some lovely quotes from the mole, from the elder moles. Who he obviously listens to and pays attention. And he says, you know, that they suggest that you listen less to your fears and more to your dreams. Yeah.
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 Well, fears are always controlling, aren't they? And they stop you doing things. So we should try not to listen to them so much.
And was there any of that swirling around your head when somebody suggested you animate your characters?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, you're always thinking of what could go wrong and, you know, And also, you know, like now it's the idea that it's a finished film coming out, and it's there's fear there as well, you know. I'll be trembling on Christmas Day staring at the tape.
Don't go on Twitter. No.
I will not go on Twitter, no. But, you know, so, you know, you can never be, well, I can only speak for myself, but I'm never completely fearless. But I think you just have to do it, you know. Seize it.
Well, when you do, you know, if you do go onto Twitter and you just have to hear the mole in your head, one of our greatest freedoms, Charlie, is how we react to things. So there you go.
Thanks. I'll write that down. Thanks very much. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. The mole is right.
The mole's right.
It's not, you're not the first to quote My book at me, friend. By the way, Charlie, just the record, you know, you should.
Your friends do it. Oh yeah, yeah. Look at you writing that stuff, and you're not living by it. Go on. Yeah. We've spoke before, but I was just doing a little bit more, and there's a Love Actually connection, there's a Nelson Mandela connection, but you're a cartoonist for The Spectator.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah,
go on.
No, I just did. I've always done silly sort of lighthearted cartoons, and I used to send them in, and then we used to be really shocked when they were suddenly actually in the magazine. Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so it was a brief encounter really with them, but I liked it, you know.
Yeah. And then the Richard Curtis Love Actually, because I think yesterday we said it was 20 years since Love Actually was out.
Mm-hmm. First. Is it really?
Yeah. I know.
Oh no.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, so I was on that set doing drawings, and then we auctioned them for comic relief, yeah.
Ah, right, okay. And then we're flying through these, it's great. And the Nelson Mandela thing, Mandela.
Yeah, Mandela, yeah. A few artists did collaboration work with him, and then they were made into prints, and they were sold for his, to raise money for his foundation, yeah.
Right.
That was a while ago as well, yeah.
And you're still drawn away and putting stuff up on social media. And the world has turned a corner since we last spoke, hasn't it, with Ukraine? It's a scary place.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Like the last time, I think we're in the middle of the pandemic,
yes,
and all went with it. Now we're facing, it's a strange time, isn't it, for everyone, really. It doesn't seem to stop.
And people take solace in your work, obviously. That must make you feel good.
Yeah, I mean, I hope some do. You know, I get lovely emails and things from people saying they've helped. So I think it makes me feel happy that some people somewhere can get solace from the work I do. Yeah, it gives it, you know, it's nice to have a purpose in life, isn't it? And if you can do that, then I'll take that.
You do a very good Gabriel Byrne, so I'm just going to do a bit of, you know, if you don't mind. So the boy, who plays the boy in it? Tom Holland.
The boy's brilliant. The boy is played by, he's called Jude Coward-Nicholl.
Aha, and right, yes.
We found him really early on, and I think he was probably one of the first auditions of the boy I heard. And I just said, yep, that'll be him. He's grand.
So, Tom Hollander is the mole. That's sort of typecast, in a way. You know,
he's got a velvety, moly voice, isn't he?
Yeah. And then Idris Elba is the fox.
He is, yeah.
And Gabriel Byrne is the horse. So here goes. So I'll do Jude here in conversation with the horse. See if you can remember the book. See if you can remember the dialogue. Okay. So boy to horse. What's the bravest thing you've ever said?
Help.
There you go. Help.
I mean, that wasn't a very tough one. I mean, you know, help. That's what he says.
Yes.
Asking for help isn't giving up. It's refusing to give up. That's the follow on line from Gabriel. That wasn't very good. I'm sure I could have done better.
No,
I've got to stay strong.
Well, if you want to improve your impersonation, he's in War of the Worlds, which is on Disney, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and you there's a lot of him in that. He's Professor Bill Ward, and
yes.
And he goes through the whole gamut of emotion, so you can hear him when he's soft and when he's angry that, so you can Because if you're doing more interviews and you're doing more impersonations of Gabriel Byrne, you'll have to brush it up a little bit, you know.
To be honest, that's the last one I'll be doing.
especially for an Irish audience. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah. But it's you know, Gabriel, he came to our attention first in a Sunday night, I suppose it was a drama, probably a rural soap called Bracken. He was a sheep farmer in the Wicklow Mountains. That's his character was. There you go. That was him.
Yeah.
Charlie's book is beautiful, a gorgeous gift for all ages, and everyone should follow him on Instagram, says that person. Now I better tell them that there's a second book, and that's the reason we're talking to you today. So it's The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse, and it's the animated story. So these are paintings from, are they? Or just explain what I'm seeing here in front of me.
What you're seeing is stills from the film that these incredible animators did. You know, I worked with them, but essentially it's the animators' work that tells the story, and I've written the story over their work. So yeah, it's a collaborative book really of lots of people who made the film. We all made it together, and so we took the stills that we felt were good or right. And put them in a book.
Yeah,
and it accompanies the film, really. You know, we just thought we should do it.
And the original book. How many years ago is that now?
Is it 2019?
Yeah, 3 years ago.
2019. Yes. Yeah, 3 years.
Yes,
feels longer than that. You know.
So the people who came to that early, they have an appetite for something new. So this is it. This is the
thing. Would. I mean, I'm trying to do a second book that is, you know, a further along the line.
Mm.
And it'll be drawing some things from lockdown and since. But so this is obviously it is the same, roughly the same story with different images and a bit of development of the story and new things happen. But it's
Sometimes I want to say I love you all, said the mole, but I find it difficult. Do you? Said the boy. Yes, so I say something like, I'm glad we are all here. Okay, said the boy. I'm glad we are all here, said the mole. We are so glad you are here too, said the boy. Isn't that it? That's because we do find it difficult.
Are you looking for a job? Are you auditioning on live?
No, I'm just that struck me, that page struck me, because we oftentimes find it hard to say, you know, that we love people, and we use other ways around it, don't we? We try to
do it all the time.
It's great, we're all here, blah 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 blah.
So yeah.
So that's why I read that.
I mean, that sums up me. I'm always saying things that I can't quite say the right thing, so I say something else that, you know. Yeah, of course.
And then it's awkward when, you know, that's the snowball phenomenon. It particularly happens when you're in your teenage years. So you're trying to get the attention of somebody you fancy. What do you do? You throw a snowball at them, which seems counterintuitive, but it's the thing, that's the only way you can sort of articulate what's in your head. But there you go.
Did you do that? Did it work?
You've never done that. Okay, try it when you next time you get snow. Charlie, okay. Always lovely talking to you. We can't wait to see on BBC One the animated version of the thing. Really looking forward to that. And the book, people recognise it. It's in bookshops now. And it's perfect if you like the first one. Perfect as a Christmas present. Happy Christmas, Charlie. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye
now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We spotted this story on the cover of The Times today. A development that could potentially help surgeons treat everything from cuts to cancer. All with a little help from, wait for this, the Bowron. We should have had a Bowron role there. Joining me now is the man behind it, mathematics professor at the University of Galway, Michel Destrade. Good afternoon, Michel.
Oh, hello, Mr. Darcy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to talk to you. And I know that you're at a graduation today, so thanks for taking time out from the celebrations.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah. So I suppose we should credit your wife as well, Joyce.
That's right, yes. By talking to her, trying to explain my research at the moment on membranes, that she thought of the Bowron, and she told me, did you know that the Bowron players sometimes, try to dry the skin by rubbing their hands? And then I confirmed that with Michael Vinovels, who is, a well-making Bowron maker in the Clada in Galway. He told me that it's indeed the case that sometimes the membrane gets a bit slack and because of humidity, for instance, and then the players rub a dry cloth on the back of their hand to make it a bit drier.
Yeah,
and so
you were doing, Michelle, you were doing your research with cling film. You described what you were doing to Joyce, and she said, try a Bowron, and you found that it was the perfect thing to help you along.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. It was like a proof of concept, if you want.
Yes.
But we were interested in measuring the forces, the tension in the membrane, and there's tremendous tension in a Bowron. And so, but it's not being measured, and so with our technique, we were able to measure it, and in fact, to find the difference between the wet and dry Bowron.
Right. And what you can do now is, so you would know what is normal, for example, on the membrane of the eye or the membrane of the eardrum or the membrane of one of the internal organs. And then you can compare it to what you would measure then. And if there's something wrong, you will know. Is that the basics of it?
Yeah, that's the end goal. Yeah. At this stage, we just did the science, the maths, and the experiments in the Harvard School of Medicine, and then we were able to measure the forces in very thin membrane, like you say, like cling film or rubber. And then, if you think of membranes in the body, they can also be very thin.
Yes.
The cornea on the eyes, yes. Half a millimeter.
Yeah.
The eardrum is it just 100 microns maybe thick. So we're hoping that they will have applications in the medical field.
Wow. All thanks to Joyce and the Bowron. Hey!
Indeed.
Listen,
excellent.
Michel, or should I say Monsieur Destrad, we let you back to the celebrations and thank you so much. Merci.
Thanks for having
Sloan,
me.
Sloan, bye now. Bye. That's
bye
Michel
bye.
Destrad there. Anish Toshi now in the Priebskelton and Oakta, Le Tristan Rosenstock. Guramaga, Tristan, thank you very much. 51551ray@rte.ie. Now, Shirley has been on. She says, my young niece, Chloe Leonard, who lives in Qatar, is due to be a flag bearer at the Brazil match tonight. My brother and his family live there and two of his daughters have been selected to be flag bearers during the World Cup. Can you wish her good luck from all her family in Dublin and Wicklow? Done, Shirley, done. And I've no idea who she is, but there's a 10-year-old girl on with your man Darcy and she could run the country with one hand tied behind her back, blindfolded, says somebody there on Twitter. It was a 12-year-old girl and her name is Cara Darmody. And she is a force to be reckoned with. And she ain't going to go away. As she says herself, she will be back if they don't do what she's asked for. Now, it's time for our little Reeling in the Ears quiz. We have two quizzers standing by and we have a prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in Dublin's Hard Rock Hotel. HardRockHotel.com for more information. It's there, right smack in the middle of Dublin City Centre. You can go there, go to January sales, spend your Christmas vouchers if you have any. They have the Material Girl package. You can look it up online. They have the memorabilia. And there's some lovely little treats for you. They have a Sound of Your Stay program with a personalised playlist. You can bring vinyl and a record player. Well, the vinyl will be pretty useless without a record player, up to your room. And a Fender guitar and an amp if you want to do that as well. HardRockHotel.com. Hello, Sarah Morris.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very good.
You're in Meath.
Calming down the chaos in this house.
There's chaos in the house, is there? Go on.
There's three boys coming home from school. It's always madness.
Oh, so this is the calm before the storm, is that it?
Oh, absolutely.
So you've a 15-year-old named?
Ben.
And then you have twins?
Sean and Rory.
And are they identical?
No, they don't even look like brothers, as we say.
They don't even look like brothers, right?
They don't even look like brothers.
And are they different personalities?
Completely. Rory has autism and I've listened to Cara and quite a force to be reckoned with. What a little advocate. So Rory attends special school, Saplings in Mullingar. They're fantastic down there, so hello to everybody who does all that great work. They're great, great lads.
Yeah, yeah. And Sean looks out for Rory, does he? I would imagine.
Both of them do.
Both Ben and Sean, yeah. That's lovely to see. Yeah. And it'll embellish their lives, you know.
It absolutely does. They're lovely, kind, gentle boys.
Yes, you don't get out very often. That's what it says here, Sarah.
It's usually one or other of us makes a break for it.
Yeah, yeah.
One of us needs to be at home or whatever. We travel in separate cars.
Do you?
So that's entertainment in itself. We get there. But we are going to a wedding next weekend, so we're very excited about that.
Yeah, and have you had the outfit? Has he got the outfit? Has everybody got the outfit?
Well, his is easier now.
Yes, I know, but you have to ask. You never ask a man about his outfit. You never ask him. Anyway, so have you got the outfit?
Yeah, just about.
Okay.
A little help from my friend.
So you're just accessorising, that's all you have to do after. Yeah, accessorise, right. Okay, you're up against Neil Butler, who's in Sligo. How are you doing, Neil?
Hi, Ray, how are you?
Good. You're on the road, doing what?
I'm just off the road, actually, just home from work, yeah.
Ah, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. So what do you do for a living?
I'm driving a truck there for a furniture company, Easy Living. Shout out to all the truckers
out
there.
Now, again, people love to see you arriving at their door, don't they?
Oh, it's like Christmas every day.
Yeah, it is. You know, because there's the chairs that they've agonised over, they've had arguments over, they've debated them, what colours, what size, will we get 4 or 6 or 8? Yeah. And yeah. Eventually, after all that, they make the decision, they go and make the purchase online or in the store, and then Neil comes along with the finished product. Yay!
Yeah.
Who's at home?
Sarah's at home with me, with wife here. And we have Josh and Grace then as well.
What age is our Josh and Grace?
Grace, she's just done her junior search. She got her results there yesterday. She's very happy.
Happy Grace. That's Grace. Yeah.
And we have Josh then. He's walking away there. He's 22.
All right, right. So Grace, was there a disco on in nearby?
This is what I asked her, Ray, you see, but she was quite quiet. She said there was nothing on, and she's her first little job there in lifestyle. So she's busy little girl now.
She's working in lifestyle sports, is she? Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And she's 16 then? Is that
16, yeah.
I think that's the law, isn't it? You can't work till you're 16.
Well, it is, and she only turned 16 in October, so as soon as she... turned her birthday, then she was out with the TV, you know.
That's good to hear. It is. Okay, 3 questions each, Sarah and Neil. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. If you go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. And whoever gets the most points is the winner. And if the drawing points, we will go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Love it.
Now, Sarah, the year is 2003, 19 years ago, and we're starting at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
Short.
This 2003 Pixar film tells the story of an adventurous young clownfish. Have a listen to the clip and see if you can name the film. Here we go, short clip.
How's the lucky Finn?
Lucky.
Are you sure you want to go to school this year? Because there's no problem if you don't. You can wait 5 or 6 years.
Come on, Dad.
Finding Nemo.
Yes, Finding Nemo. Said with confidence. 2 points for you. Good start. Neil.
I have to go short.
Okay, this Christmas film, written and directed by Richard Curtis and starring Hugh Grant as UK Prime Minister, is releasing this year. Can you name it?
Very nice to meet you.
This is the Prime Minister.
Yes, we can see that, darling.
Is it Love Actually?
It is Love Actually. It is. 2 points there as well. We were talking about it earlier on with Charlie McAsee. Okay, so 2 all. Second question for you, Sarah. It is music from 2003. What do you want to do?
We'll go short.
Okay, following this band's formation on the reality TV show Pop Stars The Rivals, this song hit number one in Ireland in 2003. Can you name the group or the song? Who's that? You can give me the name of the song either. That'll do me as well.
I didn't get a verse, the chorus. No.
See, we can't give you the chorus because usually the name of the song is in the chorus.
can I chime in for 2 points?
No, you can't, Neil. You can't. Okay. No guess there, even Sarah. No.
No.
It's Girls Aloud, Sound of the Underground. Right. So nothing there, Neil. A chance for you to go in front. Do you want to go long or short?
I will go short, right?
Go short in this. Been in the truck, you know your music, he thinks, or does he? This song was by an American hip-hop group. Was huge in 2003. Can you name it or them?
Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek?
Who's that?
It's Black Eyed Peas.
Yes. You don't need to know the name of the song. Yeah, Where's the Love?
That's it.
Sarah, would you have known that?
Yeah, sorry,
that's the way they fall, isn't it? Now, Neil is on 4, you're on 2. We're down to the final question, which is on news and current affairs. You sort of have to go short, don't you?
Okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, and I hope that you get it right and Neil doesn't get his right. Okay, 2003, a young woman from Dublin became the first and only Irish Miss World winner ever. Have a listen to this clip and see if you can tell us her name. Here's a short clip.
A 19-year-old from Dublin overcame more than 100 others to take the title. Will you welcome, please, Miss World?
Rosanna Davison.
Yes, Rosanna Davison, and that was Pat Kenny introducing her in December of 2003 on The Late Late Show. Now, so you're on 4. Neil, you're on 4 as well, but you do have this question in hand. So if you get anything from this, you're today's winner. What do you want to do?
I'll go short.
Go short. Again, okay, fine. In January 2003, Dublin gained a new landmark. Have a listen, see if you can tell us what it was.
From the very top all the way to the bottom is 120 metres, 7 times the height of the GPO.
be the Spire, right?
It has to be the Spire. You're on a clean sheet, 6 out of 6. Sarah, well, sorry about that.
Not so.
Yeah,
sorry, Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah, we're going
to enjoy that, Neil.
Yeah, we're going to send you a Radar Show Keep Cup.
Great stuff. I can do that.
Yeah, there you go. And listen, lovely talking to you.
You too.
Mind yourself. Enjoy the wedding. See you now. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Very much.
That's Sarah there. Neil, well done. You're off to the Hard Rock Hotel.
Wow. Brilliant.
Yourself and Sarah, I presume.
Yes.
And you can go to hardrockhotel.com to find out what's in store for you.
And you know, Ray, it's my birthday Monday.
Yeah.
So that's a lovely present, but it's my dearest mother's birthday today. I'd love to wish her happy birthday.
Go for it.
And my dad is recovering down in hospital down in Kilkenny there after a knee operation as well.
But you better give them names, Neil.
Oh, Eileen and Paddy.
Eileen and Paddy, right. Yeah. Happy birthday, yeah. Eileen, and get well soon, Paddy.
Paddy, yeah.
Right. Neil, lovely talking to you. Mind yourself. See you. Bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Louise Kennedy won Eastern Novel of the Year last night at the On Post Irish Book Awards, and we're going to talk to her and see how she's getting on less than 24 hours after. But first, a little bit of Dermot Kennedy. There you go, Dermot Kennedy and Dreamer. I think that's the one he performed on Jules Holland this year, and that's from his new album, which is available now. Louise Kennedy, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Eastern Novel of the Year for Trespasses.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm delighted, really delighted for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so how does it feel?
It feels very good. I'm a bit tired now today, I have to say.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
A bit overexcited with all the free wine on the table.
Yeah.
No, I'm really, really thrilled. Like, when I saw the shortlist, I was so honoured. And like, loads of great books have been published, and they're only ever going to be this year, and they're only ever going to be 6 titles on the shortlist, and I didn't expect to be on it. And then when I saw who else, I thought, yeah, good luck, you know, with Sarah Boehm and Jan and Maggie O'Farrell and Audrey and stuff. So yeah, it was a huge, huge surprise.
Yeah. So Trespasses, remind people, it's set in a small town outside Belfast,
mm-hmm.
and that's sort of your story.
Yeah.
In the 70s,
mm-hmm.
And it's set in a pub, and there's a girl, and she falls for a Protestant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's basically it.
Yeah, against that's the backdrop. It's probably a wee bit more complicated.
Yeah, I know,
that.
But I'm just giving
No, that is the backdrop. So yeah, she's fairly going for it because he's not just a Protestant, he is he's a hell of a lot older than her, and he has a wife. I suppose the town that that she lives in is, you know, there's a good bit of sectarian tension. There's a very thin kind of veneer of civility around things. And then, I suppose her relationship with that man, and then a relationship that she develops with a wee boy in her class called Davy after his father is attacked.
Because she's a school teacher.
Yeah, she's a teacher as well, and helps out in the family pub. And those stories sort of collide fairly dramatically towards the end.
And brilliantly written, obviously.
Thank you very much. Well.
No, but remind people, because we spoke to you back in May, mm-hmm. April actually,
yeah.
And I can't expect people to remember our conversation. So you were brought up in Hollywood, mm-hmm. near Belfast, and then when the Troubles hit, you moved down to Naas.
Yeah.
Isn't that it?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. But the writing thing came late.
I was very late. So a friend of mine, Niamh McCabe, had been invited to join a writing group, and that was in January 2014. And she asked me to go, which I thought was ridiculous and hilarious. And she kind of came eventually after asking me a few times and pretty much bundled me into the car and drove me there. And that night, we all agreed to try and write a short story. And I went home and actually started working on it straight away. And this terrible feeling of doom in a weird way, because I thought that they'd all laugh at it and I wouldn't have to write another one. But they were very, I mean, I think when I started to write it, maybe something happened where I just thought I should just be sitting typing all the time. Well, I wasn't typing that, I was handwriting it in a notebook actually from the restaurant that we had at the time.
Because you were a chef, that was your job.
I'd been a chef for nearly 30 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So people do the maths then on that. So,
well, I was 47.
47?
47, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then you got a cancer diagnosis.
I did.
Was that a kick in the arse for you? Is that what really drove you on?
Yeah,
I
don't want to make light of it. And I think everybody's experience of cancer is different. But there's been a lot of cancer in my family. And I think that maybe because
just
of
remind
that,
you, because I spoke to your
well,
dad.
Well, it's all the women. So my mother, my
two
mother,
sisters,
my two
Joanne,
sisters
Sinead,
and me. And actually for the last while we've been doing it kind of in twos. So my sister Joanne got it first. And she's okay now, thank God. And then my mother and myself had sentinel node biopsies on the same day in spring 2019. 19. So she'd just been diagnosed with breast cancer, and I had just found out that I had malignant melanoma. So I had surgery, and I had a bit of time. I knew I'd have a little bit of time off work, and I had a wound on my shoulder and under my arm and stuff. And I just thought, well, I suppose I spent a few days like binge watching things on Netflix, and then I just thought that I should maybe wise up. And I'd been kind of thinking, oh, I'm going to write a novel, and I'd made a playlist and really done very little work on it. And it just seemed to give it a bit of urgency. So
What do I mean, a playlist?
I just made a playlist on Spotify of like songs.
Inspirational ones.
Yeah, kind of. I guess it's like the equivalent of, I don't know, interior decorators with a mood board or something. Yes. So I make playlists because sometimes for maybe stories that are set in the past or something. Because in some ways, I don't know, I think, well, music is like a big trigger for me to trigger other memories and things.
I'm trying to remember the book though, the solicitor, the older man, he had a record player in his...
So he has a record player, yeah. And then there are other things where, Cushla goes to visit a house where this very surly teenager is playing Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel in his bedroom. And
come up and see me.
Yeah, and then there's a mention of Superstar, the Carpenters and stuff like that. Yeah. So there's just all of those songs. And I think maybe I was just trying to remember what it was like. The sort of music my parents played or the music that we liked in school, you know. Yeah, on the playlist, like Tiger Feet by Mud is on the playlist and stuff like that.
Can you do the dance?
I could then. I'd say I'd probably put my hips out if I tried it now. I wouldn't attempt it. Yeah. So I think maybe having the diagnosis just gave it all a bit of urgency.
Yeah. And your time off.
So. I had time off, yeah. I suppose within maybe 12 weeks I had something that you could charitably call a draft of a novel, and that it was...
I'm wondering, in those 30 years working in kitchens, and I can't imagine you have much time to think in kitchens normally, but were you going over writing a novel in your head or not? Was that ever a dream or a notion or...
I think that maybe in my family we were expected, you know, my parents both come from big families, and when we were all together you were kind of expected to vie for your place a little bit, like earn your place. So we were probably expected to be kind of entertaining or something and tell stories. My father's a very good storyteller.
We had him in, he is.
Yeah, yeah, he's great. And so I think that maybe there was that. But definitely in my 20s, not my 30s because I had small kids, but definitely in my 20s I was wasted all my best lines in the pub.
Right.
Yeah. So that doesn't happen anymore. So I suppose any of the lines that are half decent...
you write them down.
They write them down. Exactly. They're going to better use.
So does this mean... It's a brilliant time of the year for it to happen, obviously, because... And that's no coincidence, but... People, I think 60 or 70% of book sales are in the next few weeks.
Are they?
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I didn't know that. Even better. Yeah. I was not happy with my big heavy trophy.
No. It has commercial implications for these kind of things. Yeah, yeah. So people will come because it was early in the year. A funny thing happened actually after I spoke to you and I'd read the book and I was in the market for a lawnmower. Mm-hmm. So I went up to the local lawnmower shop and Tony owns it. Tony nearly has a mirror image of your story.
Really?
Brought up in Belfast, uh-huh. Left there in the 70s. And I said, do you read? And he said, yeah, I have the book for you. Mm-hmm. So I bought the lawnmower, went home, got your book and brought it back off him. Now, I didn't get a review, but because it worked out fine.
I hope the silence isn't that disapproval.
Well, no.
This is like a big fear of mine that Nordies would read it and go, what?
Well, anyway. I don't think so. I have to go back for a service, 1 year service. So I'll ask Tony for a review then. But it was just coincidental. It was nearly, he's nearly exact same age as you.
I think there are a lot of people, you know, who left. And, you know, for people who left as children, maybe their accents kind of disappears and stuff like that. Well, mine certainly did.
But it's a story we don't hear a lot of, you know.
No, and I think, you know, for anybody who left in the 70s and 80s, I'm not sure if people in the South were... I don't think they really understood what was going on and maybe kind of regarded us as a kind of troublesome kind of a bunch.
Yeah.
And I think maybe... I don't know. I think that maybe people just moved down here and tried to keep their heads down and didn't talk about it very much.
Yeah. Well, it was always up there, wasn't it? And it was in... I remember my childhood was in black and white, you know, it was up there. But we were talking to Lisa McGee recently.
Yes.
And we ran out of time, but near the end, she was talking about the collective trauma. Mm-hmm. That's sort of coming home to roost, if you like, up the north.
Yeah, I think there is that. And maybe the people... I mean, there is a lot of fiction, you know, really great writing about the north coming out. Not just fiction, you know, there are non-fiction books and there's great poetry and everything coming out of there. And I don't know if that... I mean, it was always there. And I think that definitely something happened with Anna Burns and Milkman.
Yes, amazing.
Is that... I think that... that her success with Milkman meant that editors and agents would pay attention maybe when...
They probably thought it was, no, we don't go there.
I think it was just like, don't write about, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to know about the troubles or something. This is what, I don't know because I started writing recently, but I know that I've heard that, you know, for a long time people just weren't interested in reading it and weren't interested in publishing it. But maybe just a bit of distance has made it... easier maybe to reflect or something like that.
And do you know, your book, and I suppose that's what we forget as well, that normal life continued.
Yeah.
You know, children went to school, pubs were open, you know.
And do you know, people still had a good laugh. And actually, a lot of the time the humour was fairly dark, I think in the book that Gina, Kushla's mother, who's got a burgeoning gin habit, probably gets a lot of the best lines.
Yeah.
And she's got a fairly grimly hilarious take on a lot of things that are happening. I think that's, but maybe like humour is, you know, it sort of gives release or it's a coping mechanism.
Of course it is, of course
people.
It is, yeah. And there is, I remember watching, was the Hole in the Wall, were they the comedy troupe that were on ITV or BBC Northern Ireland? Anyway, but it's definitely different than down here.
Yeah, it is.
Sense of humour,
I think it is. Some people would say it's not, it doesn't, it was funny, I did an arena programme the week before last with Wendy Erskine, who's from Belfast as well, and she, and you know, we started to talk about the Northern humour, and Wendy said that there are very deeply unfunny people in the North as well, that it's not like everybody's hilarious, which is true too.
Well, that's can be said of anywhere.
It's like
really.
Extremely unfunny.
So you're up from Sligo or across from Sligo, and you're here. You got the award last night. So what happens next?
I need to go home probably and clean my house.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a short story to write, and I have another thing to write. And I had already started working on another novel. So I plan to get well stuck back into that again by about the middle of December.
And do you feel any pressure because of the success of Trespasses? You know, the difficult second novel album.
I do now.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that. It's like floating on a cloud of last night. Now you have me terrified.
If you want to be brought down a peg, just come to me.
Honestly, I'll be back. Yeah, give a bit of perspective.
So when will that? Do you put a deadline on yourself,
do
your publishers put a deadline?
I would hope to have a draft. I don't know. Anyway,
right, don't say anything. Don't say anything.
The last time worked that I'd just go hell for leather at a draft and then do about another 10 drafts trying to fix the horrendous mess of draft one.
Yeah. But that's what people say, don't they, about writing it?
The first bit is, you know, you have the temptation to think, okay, it's done, but it's actually not.
It's just a splurge, isn't it?
Well, not a splurge. That's means that you're not looking at a blank page anymore.
Yeah. And how's everybody, Joanne, Sinead and your mum?
Everybody's good. Sinead's finished all her treatment and her surgery and everything, and she's good. And I am still getting...
you're still getting treatment.
I'm still getting blasted with immunotherapy. So I had it on Tuesday. Yeah. But, you know, like the last 3 years have actually been kind of great. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
No, but they have.
No, yeah.
No, no. Honestly, they have been great. Like apart, I could do without the fucking cancer stuff, but they have been kind of great.
Yeah. Well, congratulations
Thank
again.
Thank you very much.
And Trespasses, which is the Eton novel of the year, is available in all good bookshops.
No.
Louise Kennedy.
Thanks so much.
Right. And now we've to go. Sarah and Cormac are here with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.